Hello, everyone, and welcome to the podcast. I'm not drunk. I'm autistic. I am Nara Birch. And today we are going to be talking about respite and my experiences with respite. Trigger warning, I suppose. This is a very difficult episode. 100% going to cry. I might take a few weed hits throughout the episode, just a nit. So if you hear any of that, greatly apologize. But I would say that this is the most traumatic experience of my life. Flat out would, yeah. So warnings in advance. It just really hit me that now I have to talk about this. Fuck. Okay. Let me, hold on. Sorry. Okay, that was a weed hit and a deep breath all in one. Let's start. My respite experiences, I am pretty sure that they were over the course of a year. I'm going to say over the course of the summer before my eighth grade year through my eighth grade year. And that's when they stopped. So let's set the scene. First, I would say seventh grade, this is around 2007, was one of the hardest years socially for me. I lost all of my friends. I'm not quite sure why. I think a large part of it had to do with my mental hospital stays around the time and the fact that the other kids were growing socially where I was not. So like halfway through seventh grade, I had nobody, like not one single human in that school would talk to me. It was rough. So the summer before eighth grade, I went to a sleepaway camp. Well, my mom was diagnosed with cancer. Let's start with that. My mother was diagnosed with cancer the summer before I went into eighth grade. And so there was a sleepaway camp I used to go to that I had gone to for the previous 2 years. Let me just say, I did not like going to the sleepaway camp. I didn't fit in. People didn't want to talk to me. All I wanted to do, I actually enjoyed the drama camp that I usually went to, but my parents wanted to have the house to themselves. So for 3 weeks, I would go to the sleepaway camp, even though it really wasn't something I liked. My sister loved it. It was a lot better experience for her because she wasn't autistic. She was much more socially inclined. But I got there, and I got sent back home the very first day of camp because I had meltdowns all day because I didn't want to be there. And unfortunately on that day, my mother found out that she had another kind of cancer. So she found out she had a leiomyosarcoma first, I believe. And then the day I came home from that summer camp, she had lung cancer, she found out. So they told me, we're going to basically pretend you're not here for the summer. And I think here's the thing. I don't quite remember how many times it was. I know for a fact, I personally think it was every weekend that summer that I got sent away. It could have been less. But I'm pretty sure every weekend that summer I got sent away to respite. And for anyone who hasn't been to respite or knows what it is, sorry for the creaking, by the way, I'm sitting on my bed and I'm rocking a little bit. Respite is the act of parents needing a break from their special needs child, from the person they're taking care of, anybody. It's a break. Respite is a break. And respite is like a state-funded benefit break kind of thing. I don't think my parents paid for it out of pocket. I'm not sure. Again, it was a very blurry time for me. And also still trying to come to terms with a lot of abuse. It's just a really bad situation. I was often told that I was lying about things. Gaslighting, that's the word. There was a lot of gaslighting. So I'm still trying to come to terms with what actually happened or not. But I've also come to the point where I know for a fact that the experiences I had were valid and real, and they happened, and they were terrifying, and I am allowed to talk about them, and I am to be believed because these are my experiences. But yeah, respite. The very first one I went to, I remember I was at this woman's house. The notable thing about her was that she claimed to have fucked Jimi Hendrix, which, you know what, if she did, she called him Jim, by the way. And she didn't say she fucked him, but she was like, I was good friends with him. And even me in like pre-eighth grade was like, so he put his dick inside of you? That was the notable thing about her. But like, there were always other kids, at least one or two other kids there. There was one time she told me that, like, oh yeah, if this boy here punches you, just punch him back in the face. And while I was an abused child emotionally, I did grow up, I would say probably not very well off, but I solidly middle class and I was definitely lived in an upper middle class area. All of the people at my school were more wealthy. My relatives were usually more wealthy than we were, but I never went to bed hungry, and I'm very grateful for that. This was my first time spending time around my non-upper middle class associates. And what an introduction it was to literally go to have to deal with, like, it's like people who were in the respite system, people who had behavioral trouble like me, people whose parents were not nearly as well off as mine and able to provide all of the things that my parents did provide monetarily. I'll give them that. They did that. That doesn't equal love, though. That just equals not being a complete shit being. Okay, we're doing okay. We're doing great. But, like, it was rough. Like, I wasn't, I had a lot of sensory issues with food. I remember we went to McDonald's for dinner one night, and the only thing I would eat at McDonald's was chicken nuggets, but the respite lady I was staying with said that chicken nuggets were too expensive, and I could only get a hamburger. And, like, I didn't eat that. So I was like, okay, so, like, a lot of the times I just didn't eat. I didn't like taking showers in other people's houses. I didn't love doing it at my own house at that time either, but I specifically hated doing it in other people's houses, so I would get yelled at. I went to a bunch of different respite. I also had, like, a respite care, and this is not the summer is done. We're now in the school year, and this school year was my roughest. I got taken out of my house several times by police officers and brought to respite. Which, trying not to cry, that was like this. That was one of the scariest nights of my life. I was just, I guess that's the thing. I at this point, it was just a mixture of a lot of things, and I wasn't behaving well, and I probably was having meltdowns and not listening and just not behaving well. And the thing is, I can't describe it more than that, because I honestly don't know. I don't know what was acceptable, what was acceptable autistic behavior and what wasn't. It was a very skewed view on that, so I don't know what I was doing all the time. I know I was having meltdowns for sure, and possibly, like, people would lock themselves in their room, and I would try to get into them, and just a lot happened, and I know I didn't probably handle it the way I should have, but I also had no coping techniques. And I was, like, the police came, and it was late at night, and I ended up going to this woman's house, who they, like, we went to dinner or something, and we got into a car that had, like, six like 5 seats, but like 11 people in it. It was so unsafe. And I, of course, was like the most black and white autistic child ever. I was just like, I can't do this. There's no seat belts. There's not enough seats. What the fuck? But I didn't have a choice because I was in this stranger's house. I was in a complete stranger's house, scared out of my mind. They also smoked cigarettes, and because of my mother's lung cancer, she didn't smoke, but she had claimed she'd gotten her lung cancer from secondhand smoke, because her grandma used to smoke in front of her. So I had just like the most outright, not phobia, but like anytime I smelled a cigarette, I would projectile vomit immediately. It would get me so anxious. I would get so anxious that I was gonna get cancer too. And everyone in this house smoked to the point where it just was seeping into my clothes. And it was very lucky. I have a Cookie Monster doll that was my special stuffed animal. And at that point in 8th grade, I had had him since I was 6 months old. So it was very hard to wash him. So I almost brought him with me that night. And I'm glad I didn't, because I don't think we would have gotten the cigarette smell out of him. But like, I didn't sleep that night because I was in a house surrounded by 11 different strangers that I had never met, who I didn't trust. And I had to go to school the next day. And I know I've talked about this day before, but that, like, just sitting there in, like, first period study hall, trying to stay awake while the teacher yelled at me, just thinking, nobody else got taken out of their house by the police last night and was forced to go through this. Not one person. And then there was a, I think there was, I think it was only one time, I got brought to a center or something. I don't know what it was. I know there was like five other girls there, six other girls there. It was like a house. This was another like emergency placement in the middle of the night, I think. Not middle of the night, but around probably like 6 or 7, I would say. And I think I was supposed to stay there for 2 or 3 days, but I only stayed one night. It reminded me so much of the mental hospital, that I refused to sleep. I wouldn't even go into the bedroom that was assigned to me. I sat outside my room all night, refusing to sleep because I was terrified and I didn't want to sleep in a place that reminded me of the mental hospital. And I remember that, like, the fucking night nurse, the fucking lady there, was talking on her phone with her friend, laughing about how fucking, and she kept talking about how stupid and crazy the fucking girl who refused to go to bed was. Like, literally, as I was sitting there in front of her, she was looking at me and laughing. And I was like 12, scared shitless, and she was just laughing at me. So I guess I put up enough of a fuss, of a ruckus, that I got to go home early, and God forbid my parents could have had their respite. I think that's like the most of the stays that I remember. I remember that I had to, like, I was basically just taken to people's. I went to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting with one of them one time. Like, it was the weirdest shit. It sucked. All of my other classmates got to go and hang out together and have friends, and I had nobody, and my weekend plans involved strangers that worked for the government, so that my parents could get a break from me. And there's just one other thing that I remember before I stop recording, that I remember telling my parents, that they got to have respite and I didn't. I never got respite for myself. I was constantly trapped no matter what. I never got a break. I never got a break from my autism, from my abuse, from the situation I was in. Yes, you guys, I'm so glad you were able to have a weekend to pretend that I didn't exist. I'm so glad that you got that. Guess what? I never got a break, not once. And that was the hardest part. I wanted respite from myself. I wanted respite from my life, and I didn't get the choice. And I had to just live through it. Okay. I think that's it. Sorry, I knew this was gonna be an emotional episode, but I think it's important for me to talk about because I couldn't verbalize this either as a child. I was able to verbalize I can't take a break from myself. I was able to verbalize that, and I still think that was a very poignant thing I was able to verbalize as a child, but I never had the chance to talk about this. Like, there were often times where I felt like I would tell the social workers, I would tell people, oh, they locked me in my room during meltdowns or things happen, and my parents would just tell them that I was lying. I don't know. My views are so warped. Oh my God. Okay, my eyes are starting to burn. So I'm gonna stop because I still have to go over and listen to this. So another 15 minutes of this, but I appreciate you guys. To any parent out there who is parenting their autistic child with love and understanding and acceptance, please know that I am sending you the best fairy magic in the world. You are incredible. You are making a difference in your child's life if you ex for accepting them for who they are. For loving their autism and loving what makes them and understanding that there are going to be rough days. There are. But you understand that it's rougher for them than it ever will be for you. Just please know I appreciate you. And child me would have loved to have you as a parent. Be Bob and Linda from Bob's Burgers. That's all I can tell you guys. Be them, because there's no parents more accepting than them. All right. I love you guys. Thank you so much for listening. Yeah, bye.